Good morning. Today is Friday, April 22nd, 2022, and the time is 8:30 a.m. I now call this meeting of the Audit Committee of the Finance Commission of Texas to order pursuant to Chapter 551 of the Government Code. At this time, I will conduct a roll check. Cliff McCauley, are you present?
I'm here.
Hector Cerna, are you present?
Present.
We have a quorum of the Audit Committee with three members present. If there is anyone wishing to address the commission, you will need to fill out a witness affidavit form and bring it to the front. Public comments on non-agenda items are limited to 5 minutes and agenda items to 10 minutes. The first order of business is the approval of the minutes of the Finance Commission Audit Committee meeting held on February 18, 2022. These minutes were circulated to the members in the agenda packet. Are there any corrections to the minutes?
I have no corrections.
Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes of the Finance Commission Audit Committee meeting held on February 18th, 2022?
So moved.
Cliff McCauley?
Second.
Hector Cerna? Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it and the motion passes. We will now move on to item B. Commissioner Cooper, would you please give us your report?
In the recap of the Texas Department of Banking Audit Activities are on page 5. The Texas Cybersecurity Framework Assessment is remediations are continue, and we will discuss this at the Audit Committee in August, with the Audit Committee in August. The Texas Comptroller Public Accounts post-payment audit is still in process. Then the bank examination audit by Garza Gonzalez will be presented later this morning. The IT examination audit by Garza Gonzalez would be a field work to begin April the 25th, and also field work on the consumer assistance follow-up report. So that's all we have, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Commissioner Pettijohn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our report is on page 7. The first item relates to the report by the State Auditor's Office, which is included, which I'm going to talk about in just a minute. The second item is the report by the internal audit by Garza Gonzalez and Associates on regulated lender examinations. The field work begins on that next week, as well as, which is not on here, but just the follow-up items from the prior audit is also going to be included as part of that internal audit. And then lastly, we've mentioned, and we've had this for some time, this Department of Public Safety audit on non-criminal justice information, criminal history information. The field work was done over a year ago, and we still haven't received a report. So at some point, we'll decide whether we're going to or not. But anyway, that's still pending. Let me turn to the State Auditor's report on that begins on page 8. And I just wanted to mention a few things. This is the report that they do on self-directed semi-independent agencies. And there are 4 detailed areas of review. In all cases, they're looking for accuracy, completeness, and effectiveness of our controls. They looked at financial data, performance measures, budgeting and fee setting, and IT controls. It's a pretty comprehensive audit. We received a low risk rating on those first 3 areas, which means that the audit identified strengths that support the agency's ability to administer the program or function audited. On the 4th area, in IT controls, we received a medium rating, which means that the issue identified presented some risk or effects that, if not addressed, could moderately affect our agency's ability to administer the function. This area contains the only finding, and action is needed to address that concern and reduce the risk. That's the change management area, which we are already working on and have a plan to mitigate the risk associated with that particular issue. I want to say that how much I appreciate the work of the team at the State Auditor's Office. They were professional, they were thorough, they were detailed, and they communicated extremely well with us throughout the audit. We found the process itself to be beneficial, and during the audit, the auditors, as well as our own staff, identified several processes and procedures that were not significant enough right to make the report, but they were insignificant for that, but they certainly identified opportunities for us to improve, and we are certainly in progress working on several of those particular issues. I'm proud of the work of our staff and the results of this audit, and I wanted to publicly commend the work of our audit response team and the agency, Moran Diamond, Christine Graham, Chris Churchill, and Ariel Hardman. Then moving on from the audit, I'm happy to answer any questions on that. Otherwise, moving on to page 31 is another report we received, and this was an on-site consultation from the State Office of Risk Management. And this is just a consultation they conduct with us to discuss observed or potential exposures in an attempt to eliminate or mitigate risk. They made a lot of comments, and they're generally positive, and they had no additional recommendations, although they offered to provide us with some additional resources, which we asked about and requested them to provide to us. So with that, that concludes my report on audit activities.
Great. Thank you. Commissioner Retta, your report.
Thank you very much. From the Savings and Mortgage Lending, the audit activities report is on page 35. It's a rather brief report. We don't have any pending audits. The one we do have is a penetration test and scan that's completed in January, and the rescan on that is still pending. We certainly think that we'll have that before or by the next meeting to report on that. Then the other audit that we have pending is legal enforcement. We did receive notice this week that the field work will begin on May 9th. So we may have something to report, if not at the next meeting, certainly progress, but then after that. And that concludes my report.
Okay, thank you. We will now move on to item C. Commissioner Cooper, would you please give us your report?
Beginning on page 37, we have several reports to go over. The first on page 37 is the prepaid funeral home seized funds, and we do not have any seized funds for this period. Beginning on page 38 would be the trust-funded prepaid funeral guarantee fund investment report. Shows the balance of $1,412 at the beginning of November, ending at $1,402. The $14,000 in deductions would be the biggest component on the detail below is item B, $11,000 issued to consumers and $2,300 escheated to the comptroller's office. And that's the primary activity there. We're down below, you see where the funds are held with detail. And then on page 39 would be the insurance funded prepaid funeral guarantee fund. That's starting out with $792,000. We have the addition, $43,000. Would be the funds that come in March when a policy is sold, the dollar goes into the account. And so we have an ending balance of $836,000. And again, below shows where these funds are held. And that's all we have.
Thank you. John?
Thanks. Our report begins on page 40, and Moran Diamond, I believe, is prepared to provide our investment officer report.
Good morning. Moran Diamond, Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. The investment officer report is on page 40 and 41 of your packet. TP is on page 40. As you will note, in both funds, additions were made to the recovery fund and TF in Q2 following the renewal cycle for RMLOs and credit access businesses, respectively, which both renewed in December of 2021. Also included in additions for TF is $98,000 that came in at the end of Q2 with regards to a settlement and will transfer right back out. This is an action that TTSTC takes, and that will transfer right back out at the beginning of Q3. So generally speaking, there was a decline in the value of the investment portfolio with the total endowment fund of $9.93 million at the end of Q2. That's all on this. Thank you.
Anything else? No, that's good. Okay. Commissioner Rennett, your report, please.
Yes, the report will be given by Antonia Antop, the operations director.
Good morning, members. Antonia Antop for Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending.
Our investment officer report begins, is on page 42. There is normal activity of the recovery fund during the past quarter, but the one thing I would like to draw attention to is there's a new line in the report under cash and cash equivalents that states mortgage grant fund designated balance. The mortgage grant fund was established during the 87th legislative session, and its purpose is to provide grants for financial education relating to mortgage loans, and also to pay claims to consumers who are harmed by an unlicensed person claiming to be a mortgage loan originator. There were two bills passed relating to the mortgage grant fund, and according to one, the balance in the recovery fund as of the end of the calendar year in excess of $3.5 million needs to be transferred out for the use of to the mortgage grant fund and be available for payments. According to the second bill, however, the balance of the mortgage grant fund cannot exceed $300,000. So as you see, the amount that is available for the mortgage grant fund is much larger than $300,000. So at this point, what we are doing is just designating within the recovery fund until we have a better solution. We will be tracking it here with on paper. We expect the first transfer to be later in the year, and then we will have a separate report for the mortgage grant fund activities presented to you. We have two. And do you have any questions on the mortgage grant fund before I continue? There's currently two CDs that are maturing now in April, so we will be working on those to see whether we will be renewing them as investments of the recovery fund. But and we will report on these next time, or with the third quarter report, which will be in August. So this concludes my presentation. Unless you have any questions.
Thank you.
That's the
end of your report.
That concludes our report.
Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the agency's 2022 second quarter investment officer report?
So moved.
Victor, is there a second?
Second.
Cliff, any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it, and the motion passes. We will now move on to item D. Commissioner Cooper, will you give us your report, please?
I'd like to ask Sammy Chadley, our CFO, to present the report.
Good morning. Sammy Chadley, Department of Banking. On page 43 is our operating statement for the quarter ending February 28, 2022. Actual revenues are at 100.8% of budget, and our actual expenditures are at 86% of budget. I'll go over some of the various explanations on page 44. So on page 44, I'm going to go over three items. Penalties, the second item, penalties, non-depository supervision. We have a variance there, and that is due to higher than anticipated collective penalties, primarily from money service businesses. Second item, employee compensation and benefits. We have a positive variance there, and that is due to vacancies. We've had 37 as of the end of, as of February 28. 10 of them are administrative and 27 are financial examiner series. The last item I'm going to go over is miscellaneous operating costs, the last item on your page. And the positive variance there is related to higher than anticipated statewide cost allocation plan assessments by the Texas Comptroller of Public Accounts. Also, we had unanticipated court reporter service charges. And finally, we had an unbudgeted temporary contract expenditures for a human resources specialist. And there was a budget variance that was approved by the commissioner to proceed with that expenditure. Any questions so far? Page 45 is our liquidity report. Our unreserved cash balance is at 4.87 months, which is within the liquidity policy guidelines, 2 to 6 months.
Thank you.
I have. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Commissioner Pettijohn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Moran Diamond is going to provide the report for Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner.
Moran Diamond, Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. So with regard to the fourth quarter financial statements, these are on page 46 of your packet. I just wanted to highlight a few items from the variance analysis on the following page. Overall revenues are at 90% of the budget. Just a few notes on, one note on revenues with regard to consumer lending. The negative variance of about 19% is due to lower than projected renewal rates for regulated lenders and RMLOs, including increased discounts than projected for both regulated lenders and RMLOs as well. Moving to expenditures, overall expenditures are at 89% of the budget. Just a few notes on that as well. With regard to personnel, as has been mentioned, these expenditures are 8% under budget, primarily due to delays and difficulties in filling vacant positions. Moving to information technology, this category is 47% under budget due to timing of projects and expenses, and payment of some IT expenses will be higher in Q3 as well. And lastly, miscellaneous operating costs. This category is 41% over budget due to the timing of insurance premium payments, replenishment of certain accounts, and timing of increased fees for electronic payments. The fees for receiving electronic payments significantly decreased in Q2 as well. Moving to the liquidity report on page 48 of your packet, total cash at the end of the period was $14.7 million with 10.9 months of operating cost available. We do at the OCCC collect revenue seasonally with a higher portion of revenue collected in Q1, Q2. You can also note again at the bottom of the report a proposed amount of unreserved cash based upon the pro forma action taken at the December Finance Commission meeting. And projections for fiscal year end 22 indicate that at that point, cash reserves will be at 3.5 months. And I'm happy to answer any questions on this.
Thank you. That was the end of yours.
Yes, that concludes our report. Thank you. Commissioner Reddick.
Yes, the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending financial statements on page 49, and Antonio Tomasov, Director of Operations, will also do this.
Antonio Antop for Savings and Mortgage Lending. Our financials are on page 49, as Commissioner Reda stated. We are currently at 3.7% under budget in revenues. I'd like to point out the budget variance analysis on the next page says that we're over budget, but we're actually under budget. And our expenditures are at 10% under budget. The biggest item here to mention is we have several vacancies which really drive that, our expenditures are under budget. And the vacancies are so that the unfilled positions drive other categories to be underspent. We have a couple of the travel is expected to pick up in the next quarter. We're starting to do more on-site exams and more training events that are in person. So we'll see how that will affect the financials. Liquidity report is on page 51. We are currently at 7.5 months of unreserved cash balance, and this is our highest point during the fiscal year because of the renewal period that just ended. From here on out, our balance should be decreasing, and with our lowest point being in the fourth quarter. Any questions? Thank you.
Conclude the report.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the agency's 2022 second quarter financial statements?
So moved.
Cliff?
Move.
Second.
Second. Hector, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Ayes have it, and the motion passes. We will now move on to item E, and going to start a discussion with regard to internal audit. Just one moment while I grab it. So will you give your report first, or you want to have the discussion first? Thank you. So with regard to Garza and Gonzalez and Associates, they were awarded the contract for internal audit services by the audit committee on February 14th of 2020, which covered the September 2019 to August 2020 fiscal year. The contract allows for 3 one-year renewals. So we have the original contract was fiscal year 20, then we have fiscal year 21 and 22, which is the current year. And we do have the opportunity to renew for a third and last opportunity to renew the contract for services. And so the discussion today is really to see if the audit committee with finance commission approval has, we do have the discretion to extend the contract for a third and final term to end in August of 2023. So that would, and then we would, if we decide we do not want to move forward this year, then we would have to start the RFP, request for proposal process now. If we decide that we want to renew one more contract term, then we would not start that request for proposal process until the 2023 meeting at this time in April. So any discussion, conversation, questions?
No question, the time flies. Absolutely no question about that.
Would it be appropriate to get some color from the commissioners on their opinion?
I'd make a comment. We've had a good relationship with Garza Gonzalez. Their people are very professional. They conduct their business in a professional manner and are very, they communicate well. And it would be my recommendation that we would, y'all would extend the contract for another year.
And we would, I would agree.
And I would say based on my review of it, consistent with that.
Yeah.
So is that action that we need to take?
Mm-hmm. I think
so. In the form of a motion that I make the motion that we extend it for 1 year.
Okay, Cliff makes the motion. Second?
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Everybody in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And the motion passes. All right, thank you. Next order. We'll move on to your report, I believe. Ms. Kimberly Lopez from Garza Gonzalez and Associates will be presenting the Texas Department of Banking's Bank Examination Audit Report, which is item F.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Cooper, did you want to say any words before I start?
No, I really want to hear what you have to say.
Thank you. And I guess I jumped the gun a little bit about sitting in the seat,
right? We can just fire questions.
I kind of skipped over that one, but thank you for extending that contract. Appreciate that, and looking forward to serve the commission for another year, although we're not completed with this year yet. But yes, this morning I am here to present the results to you for the bank examinations area for the Texas Department of Banking. That report can be found in your board packet on pages 53 to 65. We performed the audit during the month of March of 2022. The final report was submitted to DOB on March 28, 2022, so that it could be presented here at the April's meeting, as that was the target date that that DOB had requested from us. So I'm happy to report that we were able to complete the audit in an efficient manner, thanks to the staff of DOB, mainly Wendy Rodriguez, who facilitates, and Sammy Chanley, who kind of oversee the audit process for DOB, and the bank examination staff headed by Mr. Frazier. So I'd like to thank them for providing the information in a timely manner. We do look at a lot of information during the audit process because there is so much to look at, especially in this area, the bank examinations area. There is a lot of procedures
to review and process to also review and walk through during the audit. So I'm happy to report here that we were able to perform it very efficiently. Even though it was remote, we do a lot of virtual communication and have, I call it FaceTime, but it's more of a video conferencing type of process so that we can also do work walkthroughs in that manner as well. So wanted to recognize them for that and letting you know that that they are providing the information. We were not restricted in any form or fashion. And with that, on page 55 of your board packet, this is our report to you, commission members, indicating that we did perform the audit for DOV's bank examinations area. As part of the audit, the objective is to ensure that the internal controls are operating effectively and that the policies and procedures that are in place are being followed and that they do ensure compliance with the required laws and regulations applicable to the area. As part of the audit, as I indicated, we did perform a number of procedures, and I'm happy to report that we did not find any misstatements, any comments that are included in the report. However, this report does include a lot of information related to the audit. Page 56 of the audit report does indicate that there was a 2022 internal audit plan that was dated November 19, 2021 and approved by this body and the Finance Commission on December 17, 2021. In accordance with that audit plan, we have performed already, of course, the risk assessment to prepare that audit plan. And this is the first audit completed as authorized with that plan. And as I believe Ms. Commissioner Cooper indicated, the IT examinations audit is scheduled to begin on Monday, officially begin on April 25th, although we have already started our preliminary procedures in that area. Pages 58 of the report through page 60 gives background related to the area. Of course, it's a very short summary compared to everything that is in place on the processes for that area, but we like to give background to the commission members so that you can kind of understand, and if you have any questions related to the process that was underway, that we could answer any questions that you may have. It also gives you some data as far as the statistics related to that. As you can see on page 59 of the report, the second paragraph, last paragraph, it does indicate that during our audit period, which was September 1st, 2021 through January 31st, 2022, so the audit was for a 5-month period, the area did issue 30 reports, and 5 of which were examinations conducted jointly with the federal supervisory agency. Moving down, as part of the processes, there is a work paper review process, and there's more statistics given here. With those bullets under the comprehensive reviews and the examiner council's review, we do provide you some statistics there just so that you can know that this is how much work has been done during those 5 months or during the other different periods that are denoted there. In addition to that whole examinations process that we look at, we also look at the training part of the examiners as part of the audit. And moving to page 60, I think an important part of looking at the internal audit, not only here at this state agency, but at other state agencies, we did look at how the COVID-19 pandemic affected the agency and how the agency took action to ensure that there was still a smooth transition, although it drastically changed the way that the examinations, I shouldn't say drastically, it did change a number of processes that were in place, but we wanted to ensure that it didn't shortcut anything to where the processes weren't working as they should have. So we're happy to report that everything was that we found everything in place, even though that there were some changes during the pandemic. In addition to that, we do look at the performance measures related to the area. Page 61 through 62 provides the audit objective, the scope of our audit, the methodology, and most importantly, on the bottom of page 61, leading to page 62, and all the way through page 63, as it indicated, we performed a number of procedures to get to satisfy ourselves that we concluded our audit in an efficient and effective manner. And based on that audit, it is a clean audit and with no comments to be reported at this time. And if you have any questions related to this report, I'd be happy to hope to answer them right now. Any questions for me?
May I make a comment? The bank examination side is obviously the meat of what the department does. So most of the FTEs are here, and most of the activities here. I think we're bank examiners, so when we go into banks, we don't do audit work, but we do examination work. So being audited is an interesting concept for us. We have a lot of policies and procedures. And as Kim mentioned, we have a lot of internal controls, and we have these in order for our processes to be consistent, and try very hard for them to be done properly. And I really appreciate the audit that y'all have done. It gives me comfort that we're doing the technicality parts very, very well, and want to also just say to Wendy Rodriguez and Dan Frazier, and the rest of the staff, I thank y'all for your work. I think this kind of says that it doesn't let us drop our guard down at all. We keep working hard, but it is a validation that we're doing the right thing. So appreciate that.
Thank you.
Anything, Hester? Any questions?
No, it's comforting that there's consistency in the process. Thank you.
Appreciate your report. Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the Texas Department of Banking's bank examination audit report as prepared and presented by Garza Gonzalez and Associates?
So moved.
Moved by Hector.
Second.
Second by Cliff. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Ayes have it, and the motion passes. We will now move on to item G, Commissioner Petitoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Item G relates to the Texas Financial Education Endowment. I'd like to call upon Christine Graham. It's going to make a presentation related to the activities in the endowment, and then later be joined by Carl Hubenthal from our staff.
Christine Graham, Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. I'd like to go through our TFE update, which begins on page 67 of your packet. The fourth grant cycle ended on December 31st, 2021, so we have recently received and wrapped up all of the reimbursement requests for that final period of the grant. Over the two-year period, we reimbursed just over $275,000 in expenses related to organizations who promote financial capability and financial education to the citizens of Texas. There is a report that begins on page 71 that's a rather long report, but it gives you a breakdown of what each of the organizations were able to do within the grant period. A few highlights: we had a couple of organizations, Easter Seals and Family Service Association of San Antonio, who helped 12 people each purchase houses, which is, you know, most people's biggest investment. So they are doing really great work there. We also saw a couple of different organizations really be able to help individuals increase their savings accounts. Some of that came from stimulus funding and working with people to create budgets, track budgets, learn to save money. And so a couple of organizations won an average savings increase of like thousands of dollars. So they're really working hard to promote financial education. Our new grant cycle started in January, and so they're in full swing. I will say, just to wrap up on our last grant cycle, is they had to do this all through COVID, and that's tough because there's so much that's one-on-one working with people and numbers, but they really did a great job pivoting and working remotely, and so I'm really proud of all of our grant recipients. The next thing I'd like to talk about is the sort of current status, background, and future of the endowment fund. So the Financial Education Endowment Fund was established by the 82nd Legislature in 2012. As I mentioned, we're entering our fifth grant cycle. the sort of size and objectives of the fund from the 2012 setup have really been achieved. And so at this point, we're really trying to figure out what the future expectations of this endowment fund are, what the grant should look like. And a couple of key considerations that we're looking at are sort of some bullet points for you on page 68 is the timing of our awards, the number of our awards, the amount of awards per organization. And we're thinking of these things because the grant fund has just grown, or the endowment fund has grown exponentially. You'll see a bar chart on here on the top of page 68. It's almost $10 million. And our first few grant cycles, we awarded $250,000 for the first three, $300,000 this last time, and $409,000. So we are increasing, but the size of the grant fund is something that we really want to figure out. What do we do with education and NTP going forward? At a meeting with our grant advisory committee, we have a group of individuals who sort of provide us with their expertise and advice. And so we got some feedback from them on some of their different thoughts and ideas for how we might adjust some of the criteria or award amounts going forward. And Carl has done some forecasting on the grant fund. And so I'd like to turn it over to him to sort of go over some of the financials.
Carl Hubenthal, Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. On page 69, we ran some forecasting models, which tried to give some context to where the grant fund and grant awards might be anywhere between the next grant cycle to five grant cycles from now. And so we took four scenarios, different scenarios, and ran 10 iterations of those scenarios using our Treasury Safekeeping Investment Trust, their expected real rate of return of 6%, our current fund balance, our current grant awards, and our current grant policy of awarding grants that are the 20 quarter moving average. The average of the 20 quarter moving average of the fund balance would be the grant award for the cycle. So scenario one is our current policy, where we're doing all of that. And we averaged the 10 iterations of this model. And so five grant cycles from now, on the average of those forecasting runs, the fund balance could be $15 million, and we could be awarding a $1 million grant during the grant cycle in five quarters from now. If we looked at the best and worst run of those models, and so we could have $24 million in the grant fund using those inputs in the fifth grant cycle from now. And the worst single iteration of that forecasting, we could have $11 million. So still more than we have now in that model. And so TP did start from $0. It had contributions from the credit access business industry, $200 per location. It started with, at our peak, there was over 3,500 locations. Now we're down to about 1,500 locations. So we're getting to the point where, returns are a greater driver in the increase in the grant fund than the actual contributions. And the next scenario, we ran, instead of the entire contribution going to increase the grant fund, 25% is taken directly to increase the grant award. So grant awards increase during that cycle. So the next grant cycle, we could be, if we use this scenario, we could be handing out $800,000. And five cycles from now, it could be, over $1.1 million. So less of the contributions going to the grant fund, but we still, on average, would have about $15.9 million in our simulation. Scenario three, 50-50 of the contributions go towards increasing the grant fund and increasing contributions. So this is the highest total of our scenario for grant awards. So next grant cycle, we're giving $1 million almost, $944,000, if we went to this scenario. And then scenario four is, what if we just relied on returns alone of the investment and to increase the grant fund and stopped receiving contributions from the industry? We would still grow under the 10 iterations. On average, we would still grow the fund and still keep increasing grant awards, just at a little bit slower pace than we currently are doing under the current scenario. Are there any questions I can answer? Or?
I might ask, so this, and I'm not sure, maybe one of you are, as far as, so how do we find the grantees? Is there a list? Is it a finite, I guess?
Yes, Christine Graham, OCCC. So we want to make sure we're getting quality applications and that are doing quality programs for people. And we do a lot of outreach during the application cycle. This last grant application cycle, we had, I think, approximately 25, 26 applications. We were able to award 12 organizations. Right now, our maximum award is $40,000. So we could look at increasing that a little bit, because that can be for over a two-year period. Some of our grant advisory committee members thought that maybe our grant size should be close to maybe what a salary would be for a person, because a lot of grant work is driven in this, you know, financial education by a person actually getting out there and doing it. We haven't had hundreds of applications that were just really outstanding that we could draw from. So there is a marketing component to this that we're working on. But we even in this last grant cycle, and it was because of COVID, but they weren't able to request any reimbursements at all. And so sometimes things like that happen where they believe a program's going to take off and then it won't. So it's a balance between finding quality programs, awarding them enough funds to be able to administer their programs. At a certain point, we have not found that there are so many programs out there that we could, sustain a million dollar grant at any point in time. Yeah.
And I would assume, are some of these, I'm thinking if you go and start handing $500,000 to some of these grantees, I don't know that their structure would have the wherewithal to take a grant and use it.
I would agree with that. We have some really sophisticated organizations, and they always do say that there's more need than they have the capacity to give. So some increase in grant awards, I think, is going to be appropriate. But I don't think these organizations, some of them have, like you just said, like the Wellworth, if we were to give them some really large grant amount to really be able to turn that around and for us to see kind of a return on the investment of that grant award.
Remind us what the fund allows. We've capped it, but does it, the fund allow us to issue larger checks?
Yeah, so the fund, you know, it's an endowment fund. There's no cap on the endowment fund. Ideally, the principal remains intact and we pay out just on the earnings. So there's no cap on that, and any cap on grant awards would kind of come from y'all.
But currently in the policy manual that the Finance Commission has adopted last summer, has a cap of $40,000. Obviously, that's one of the components with the variables that you see on page 68, that's one of the variables that probably is under consideration here as we talk about what the future, we're sort of looking for some guidance and direction from the commission on sort of what are the guardrails of what are these, some of these variables that we want to move and set some new strategic direction for where we go with the endowment fund long term. For the next 10 years, I'll say. I mean, we ran it through almost its first 10 years. And I did want to point out, we've given or will by through this current cycle almost $1.5 million out in these grant awards to organizations to promote financial education and credit building capacity. And I think that's very remarkable, and commend the commission for the work that they've done and our staff that's worked on this. It's great that we've been able to do that.
Is there any way to measure the effectiveness of the different grantees and the program, the results?
Yes, yeah. The report that you have that starts on page 71 is a 6-month report period, but there will be we also issue kind of an impact report. The grant cycles right now are 2 years. And so those are available on our website for previous years. And then this current grant cycle that just ended, we'll have that out there. But I mean, they are serving thousands of individuals in financial coaching, financial education, some more than others. But they are always grateful for the funds that we provide them. We can, some of our grant committee advisory members sort of said maybe we could look at, maybe we do a grant cycle once a year instead of every 2 years. And that wasn't something that we did at the beginning of, you know, when all of this was established 10 years ago, because we just didn't have the resources. But at this time, we probably could manage that. And so maybe we do a grant every year. Do we, instead of saying that the maximum amount over a 2-year period is $40,000, do we come up with some other amount that maybe could sustain an employee or a, you know, half of a full-time equivalent employee or something like that? I think those are really the two key considerations, is what do we think the grant awards need to be to really make an impact? And again, I really thought that with the grant advisory committee member who said, you know, if you think of it along the lines of kind of a salary of a person to run it, was because I would say that 60-70% of our reimbursements are salary reimbursements. I mean, it's a big part.
And I just wanted to add, I want to extend my appreciation. Laura Warren serves as a finance commission member on the grant advisory committee. And she may have some comments that she wants to share from her perspective or not, but I did want to recognize her work on the grant advisory committee. Appreciate her participation and her input.
And, you know, the thing I think I'll add too, just for the committee, audit committee, is that this seems unique to me a little bit. Obviously, I'm still getting my bearings, but and normally an endowment would have a term to it. It would serve the purpose, and then it would disband itself. So I think part of the conversation that we're having here is that this is into perpetuity. There is no end date that's been put with this endowment. And then the question is, you know, how big is big? How big do you want the endowment? How is it continuing to serve the purpose and that sort of thing? So just to give you some background why we the conversation probably needs to happen as we start to see this reach over $10 million.
And then I guess I could ask the question, you know, we need to bring this to at some level. We're trying to bring this in for some, you know, we want to bring this forward, have the conversation. Are there other elements of information that you need to help the Finance Commission, you know, provide us with some of what the guardrails in that new strategic direction is? Are there some items you need us to provide to help us reach that? Or do you have other comments and thoughts about it?
Well, my thought is an observation that the people that are closest to this would have a better picture idea of the direction. So you've got a grant advisory committee, you've got knowledgeable staff that are seasoned in this. I would think it might be appropriate to bring a recommendation from those that are closest to us rather than members of the Finance Commission trying to operate outside of our bandwidth. So that would be my thought. Bring us a recommendation. Let's discuss it because you're the closest to it.
Yeah.
It seems surprising that we wouldn't have additional candidates. How long does it take to fill out an application? I mean, how complex is it? There's many, many, many organizations out there that could benefit from it.
Yeah, sure. I think that's a good point. Some of our grant advisory committee members, we had sent out all of our kind of forms that we used to our grant advisory committee before this last grant cycle, and kind of had asked for updates that they might have. Or some of them are really knowledgeable in grant administration. And so they made a few changes. But then when we had this conversation recently about this fund, they said, well, maybe we could look at that application again. It is a little, you know, there may be some areas that we can streamline. So that is something that we're looking at, if we can streamline the application while still getting the pertinent information. maybe it makes it easier for some organizations who don't have huge staffs to be able to apply. And so that's certainly something that we're looking into. I think that's a good point.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so any other discussion? And do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the activities of the Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund?
I don't think we need a motion on that today.
Oh, you don't?
It's just a report today.
It was just activities? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Never mind. Thank you. There's nothing to discuss for item H. And so, there being no further business, this meeting of the Audit Committee of the Finance Commission of Texas is now adjourned. The time is 9:20 a.m.